John, I want you to give me an example of two different states. One has the right to carry concealed, the other does not. And you're the criminal. Tell me what happens. You're out, you've got your gun, you're out, it's nighttime, a couple is leaving a restaurant. You are in the state that the individual has the right to carry. Go ahead.
Well, if I were a criminal contemplating a mugging or a robbery, I would look for somebody who is not alert, unpracticed, untrained, and who is not likely to have any kind of a backup. Say, for instance, not really a couple, perhaps more of somebody who's alone and not strong enough to resist. Now, that's not a clue entirely, because old ladies are oftentimes armed and they know how to handle their weapons.
Armed and dangerous.
Now, the beauty of owning a gun is that you have some kind of training that may interest you in taking more training. One of the best formulas of gun ownership is prevention of having to draw the weapon. Being alert, refusing to be a victim, and having a plan. And oftentimes, you don't even need to shoot. So sometimes the posture of being alert is enough to discourage some people who are aware that they're in a right to carry state from proceeding any further, and they may move on. And you can't be responsible for what happens to the others around the country who choose not to be armed, but they didn't check you. And that may be all the difference that's needed to close the deal. Right to carry has not been regretted by the legislators who have affirmed right to carry any more than they've been made to regret affirming citizen CPR. Now, if you're looking at a state that does not have right to carry, to make this comparison, you're going to find that there are a lot of crimes that involve guns and non-gun crime, because they know that there is a much, much higher percentage of people who not only, this is the tragedy of it, who not only aren't armed, but are who have been disarmed in their spirit.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, as part of the formula of being alert, refusing to be a victim, inculcated into the person willing to take the training, it is conspicuously absent in the kind of mentality where people don't have guns. They have been successfully deprogrammed so that their resolve is dispirited. They believe they must not fight back because the propaganda from the anti-violence movement says, gee, you can't fight back. That contributes to the violence. It escalates the violence. It does not. Paxton Quigley's book, Armed and Female, Staying Alive, internet search term Paxton Quigley. You can get her book, and she demonstrates that the findings that she has found say that people who resist crime have a much better chance of coming out of it not only alive but less injured than people who submit and give them what they want. Last year, LAPD Chief Bratton was reported by USA Today to have delivered some very bad news to the FBI for reports that he was planning on turning into the FBI as part of the Uniform Crime Report. He found, and he reported, that even when individuals give the thugs what they want, they are shot. And this is a trend.
I was going to ask you that.
Yeah.
Generally, they're coming into it knowing they're going to shoot you anyway, don't they?
Well, you got to remember that crime is largely not a consequence of poverty. It's a consequence of anger. And when you have three generations of broken homes, you have another generation in 2008 of angry people. You have them of all ages, probably from spanning three generations by now. And these people come into violent crime angry. They're angry at the old lady who didn't do anything. And this explains why so many people are beaten when they don't need to be beaten. And this is why you have to have that lethal force that can operate at a safe distance to meet grave danger. That's why it's superior to pepper spray, or a dog, or a baseball bat, or any other weapon you might choose. You know, George, what do you think the anti-violence policy people keep by their bedside?
The anti-violence people?
Yeah, what kind of program do they have where they are able to elude violence in their lives? How do they prepare?
Who knows? What are they, baseball bats?
I don't know. Well, whatever they got is probably not a gun. And whatever they have is probably going to bring them within dangerous reach.
Or they have nothing.
Maybe they have nothing. You know, I hit upon something, and it goes like this. The anti-gun movement isn't satisfied saying, I don't like a gun. They're not satisfied until they take your gun. But what they are saying is this. It has to be this, George. It just has to be. They have to look at their significant other in the eye sometime and say, dear sir or madam, you know I don't like guns. I write editorials against guns. I'm an activist against guns. And there's something maybe I haven't said. That is this. If we ever have violence in this house from a burglar or a home invasion, you cannot count on me to defend you and the kids.
I can't wait till we open up the calls, John, a little bit later on tonight, because we're going to get all kinds of stories from people who have been trained as guns since kids. And I would like people, if they were in any kind of gun situation, whether you were carrying, perhaps, to check in with us when we open up the phone lines at the top of the hour and share some of those stories with us. When you go, I assume, state to state, or you make speeches, are you accepted? Are you heckled? What happens?
That's funny. You know, that's what started this whole thing. 5 years ago, I was on a chat room for some people who were talking about guns, and I said, you know, I don't know if you guys know this or not, but concealed carry is identical to CPR. Oh, what do you mean? And I elaborated in one or two paragraphs. A friend of mine who became a friend of mine, who was running for state assembly, invited me to speak to his group for a 25-minute talk on that subject. And I said, okay. So the name of that group was ATF Night.
ATF Night.
And I was speaking to the choir. And I said, well, I don't know. I don't have anything new to say to them. These people have been smithing and guns and everything for a long time. I don't know. No. You have to speak to us. So I said, okay. So we spoke. But after the talk was over, the question and answer session lasted 2 hours. And they said, you need to write a book on this. I have never heard this before. And I said, well, you know, the reason I mentioned it is because two models exist for why we should put more trust back into the citizens. The Violence Policy Center continues to make accusations at the American citizen, saying that they are stupid, that they kill their lovers, that they're engaged in road rage, they can't be trusted. All of this stuff, for the past 10 years, none of it has come true. None of it. It can't be documented. Yet they continue to hide the fact that you are the first law of defense, first line of defense, and everything else. And so I said, well, gee, this is obvious to me. Maybe I'd better write a book about this. And the reception was hot.